Let's get this party started.
Welcome to the I Squint Podcast.
Hey everybody, welcome back to this, the I Squint Podcast. I'm your host, Justin Lang. In this, the 10th episode, I have something very, very special for you. While at USITT in Kansas City, I got a chance to sit in on one of the best lightning sessions during the conference titled, Wanna Rock and Roll All Night. It was a panel discussion led by legendary lighting designer Jim Moody. Joining Mr. Moody on the panel was lighting designer Paul Dexter. You may remember Mr. Dexter from the book he helped Mr. Moody write, Concert Lighting, Techniques, Art, and Business, which is published by Focal Press. The third panelist was Miss Libby Gray, a veteran tourer with the rock and roll bands. All three talked about what it's like being on the road and how to prepare yourself for the touring lifestyle. A lot of what was talked about came directly from Mr. Moody's book, Concert Lighting, so if you haven't already, be sure to pick up your own copy. I'll make sure to provide a link to the book in the podcast reference on the site. Now, I must warn you on this. I try and keep profanity out of the podcast, but this was an unfiltered talk. So please be warned that road language was used and might not be suitable for all ages. Now, with that disclaimer out of the way, we pick up the panel discussion about 5 minutes into the talk. So here we go.
Corporate is really ratcheting up the austerity of the business side of what we do.
Let me add some to that. One of the things I tell my students is we tend to, because we're artists and we feel, you know, this is art and all that stuff that we, okay, you know, you've got a gig and they offer you a job and you go, okay, and then figure out you can't pay your rent for what they've offered you. What you have to understand is the person on the other side of the table has been hired specifically to get you as cheap as they can. That's their job. So don't be mad at them. I mean, that's their job. But take the opposite fantasy and fine, then I got to look out for myself. And don't be afraid to push back. Now, how hard can you push back? Well, like Paul's saying, you know, that's getting harder and harder. But because there's so many of you out there that want to do what we started out doing 35 years ago when there was nobody doing it and we could pretty much, you know, call our own shots. Because the bands didn't care. They were throwing the money in the toilet anyway. They were tearing up rooms, and they couldn't take the money home to Britain and that because of the tax base. So it was that was part of the reason a lot of the hotel stuff and that happened, because they couldn't take the money home that they made. They could only get the money from their record sales. So any of the concert money that they got for the live gig virtually would be spent or pissed away. So we got away with an awful lot, and that's what sort of started this whole image that rock and roll has, but the pressure also has a lot to do with that.
Jim, I'm sorry. Let me. I have to digress just for a second. And then, Libby, it's all yours. Being on the other side of the table, what Jim just described about the person who was behind the table negotiating the salary. Guess how much I made my first tour.
Okay. How much did I pay you?
I was negotiating with Jim, by the way. If you graduate.
How did I do?
I was really happy at $175 a week and $15 a day per diem.
There you go.
I was in heaven.
Yeah. When did you make your first tour?
1989, yeah. $350 a week, no per diem.
How much you make it now?
Not enough.
Not enough.
My 2 cents, concrete advice, as soon as you can, get an accountant. Accountants are not for the wealthy. There are a lot of accountants who specialize in the music industry, and a lot of them do the individual musicians, and a lot of them specialize in crew guys. If you're lucky enough to be in L.A., you can't swing a dead cat without hitting someone who's doing accounting for crew guys. There are not loopholes, per se, but there are things they know that will help you. It is not a luxury. Get yourself an accountant as soon as you get on the road. Things that you could not possibly imagine as tax deductions are tax deductions if you bring your receipts home. If you don't bring your receipts home, you are shit out of luck. You need someone to tell you what receipts you can bring. You can't. Everyone thinks maybe work clothes, sneakers. Nope, not deductible. But your laundry that you get done on the tour bus is. So get an accountant. Serious advice.
Ready, Jim?
Yeah, go.
Okay. So I want to talk.
Questions about it. Okay.
I want to talk a little bit about the. So a lot of times you go in and you get confidentiality agreements. I had to sign one. I did some work for Aerosmith recently, and I had more letters and new hire letters and W-9s and paperwork than I've ever had in my whole life. And it was all because, you know, they didn't want us talking about Steve Perry and Steve Tyler and Joe Perry, you know.
I'm telling.
I know. I could say stuff right now. I could say it. Okay, so negotiating systems and salary. This is part of the business part where you have a lighting system. You have an idea for the lighting system. However, the accountants and the managers have a different idea for the lighting system based on the number that they're willing to give up for it. And, you know, sometimes this works really well for a rare percent of probably two, the LDs that are out there ready to control how much is spent on the road. Everybody else, we're at the mercy of the accountants. Design and preparation. There's a really nice photograph here. That is that's a rendering, by the way, made in Lightwave. It's a 3D rendering. And you can get pretty realistic with design and preparation. Again, part of the business of getting ready to go on the tour. Presentation is absolutely everything when it comes to selling your designs. The more prepared you are, the more you thought about it, the more you write about it and put it on paper, then the chances are better that you're going to get your ideas over.
In rock and roll, one of the questions you get when you start designing for smaller bands, the first thing the accountant wants to do after you've agreed on a reasonable weekly salary, you want to talk about your design fee, and the accountant says, well, what's a design fee for? All of the preparatory material that he's talking about, renderings, drawings, sketches, blueprints, whatever you have. You have to be able to slide that across the table as the physical demonstration of the time you have put in your design. Because he doesn't care that you've been, you know, sitting in the shower for the last 6 weeks thinking about what would look really cool and talking to people. You can't demonstrate any of that. The paperwork demonstrates the design process. It is your paper trail. Art's worth money. They have to pay for it, but they won't pay for what they can't see.
You do it in the shower?
Well, waterproof paper?
That. It's really creative.
Now, here's the problem, though. I'm a member of USA. United Scenicars, IA. Problem is, under my agreement, it says I can't put pencil to paper until my agreement is signed, right? All of you in theater understand that, right? Don't work that way in rock and roll, because there is no union, including my own, which, you know, I dearly hate the fact, but they've never gotten control of it. They never went after it, and so there's nothing I can do. I can try to negotiate that way, and certainly once you get to a name status, you get a little bit, you know, better at being able to get the contract before you have to provide the design, or you've got a long-term relation with a band like Paul has had with a number of bands. So that we've got that. But in many cases, you're going to be asked to put that idea on paper and then not get hired and then go to that band's show one day and see your design on the stage.
That's how it's just done that way.
And it happens. So
the thing of it is, you really can't be too stingy with it. I mean, you've got to trust your instincts that the people that you're dealing with have some integrity, that they won't take your ideas and use them somewhere else. And that's the biggest fear. But
and you've met a manager like that?
No.
Oh, okay.
But you know what? You just have to really just give it your all. Put everything that you possibly can put in. Use all your time. Think about it in the shower. You know, think about it when you sit down. Just, it's kind of one of those molding things that you sleep on and you come back the next day. Or, you know, we can relate a lot because we did this book and written articles for years, but it's like a letter where you see the letter and you write the letter, and the next day you come back and think, what the heck was I thinking? And then you just write more about and refine it, and designs are the same way.
Yeah, one of the things I've always thought about design is, with theater, I have the restrictions that I'm dealing with. Stage is so big, proscenium so big, so many lighting positions. But in concerts, it's basically a blank piece of paper, right? So you've got the freedom to be creative. But the truth is, all three of us could take that same light plot, and it's going to be three different shows. So even if they do, quote, steal a set idea from Paul or something like that, the actual cueing of the music is absolutely individual. individual. Nobody will do it the same way. So there is the one hook you have with the artist. Hopefully they understand your approach and, you know, you're in tune with them and they want your kind of look that you can do for them. But as far as the piece of paper, that's really tough in the concert business, unfortunately. Yeah.
Not usually that early on.
You start delving into a little bit of research about what you can, you know, what tools you're going to be using. But those kinds of things are really nitty gritty and refinement afterwards.
Yeah, but you can also get in a position that Paul's doing a lot now, which when he shows us writing, because he's doing a lot of his acts where he's doing the set and the lighting together, so he has much more of a control over
the buck stops here.
The buck stops there. Yeah. Yeah.
And you know what? Can I just add to that? Yeah. The diversity that you can add to your portfolios is look into all of these different areas. Become an expert about it, because nobody will be able to, you know, sway you one way or the other from decisions that you make artistically about how you want to see stuff. And so I got to tell my favorite. I got a story here, real quick. This is a Road Cases story. Ozzy Osbourne, 1981. This is where I decided I had to diversify, and maybe you guys can take this home with you too. I showed Sharon and Ozzy my design for a new tour. This is called Diary of a Madman. And I had this little pokey hotel room in London and invited them to come over so they could see what was going to be on the American tour. I get the knock at the door. They come in, Ozzy sits down in a little chair, and Sharon comes over. Sharon comes over and starts looking at my plot, which was, no computers in those days. We, you know, drew it with templates and stuff.
Bark.
Yeah. Sound like Father Time up here. But, so I'm showing Sharon, and she's looking over at Ozzy sitting in the chair. Ozzy, come over and look what Paul's done with the lights. And so Ozzy, I look over and he's slumped in a chair like that. And he's got this beautiful fringe jacket on and stuff. And his drool is coming down like this. I did not sign a confidentiality agreement. So he's drooling on his jacket. And I swear to God, I thought at that point the penny dropped for me. I will never rely on a rock star for my income ever again. That was it. So that's when I started diversifying. I started thinking about writing. I started thinking about how I can control the sets and the staging and do it all myself.
I'm kind of the opposite, proving that it can be done all these different ways. I've always relied on the rock star for my living. I'm a one-trick pony, and probably not that great at that trick, but, you know, I got one trick.
We didn't work for the same rock star.
We didn't, that's true. I did not work for Drooling Ozzy. But all I've ever done is tour to tour to tour to tour, different types of venues, different, you know, it wasn't all rock. But it can be done, but flying without a net involves having a really big pair, if I can say it bluntly. You really have to be smart. You have to save for a rainy day. You have to be prepared for being unemployed 4 or 5 or 6 months because you're just not going to take the job. And maybe you weren't invited to be in a union for whatever reason. 1989, when I started, I was in school in the mid-80s. You figure it out. When I went to Local One and said, hey, I want to be a stagehand. Right. And your daddy was, right. So
tell Bob C's answer to you.
Oh, yeah. To his credit, the only guy with real integrity at that time, when I was running around calling up all the lighting companies, you know, I was about halfway through school, doing all the intern things, working off Broadway, Fashion Week, anything I could do. You guys, some of you are there right now. Called up every major lighting company. The names were slightly different back then, but the only guy with any integrity was Bob C. of C Factor in Long Island City, New York, who said, I will never put a woman on a tour bus. He didn't mean it unkindly, but it was the kindest thing he could have told me because I knew what I was up against. Of course, I'm thinking, oh, piss off, I'm going to end up on a bus anyway, and I still am on the bus. But people will give you a lot of reasons that are not really the reasons that, you know, hopefully there's less of that now. But anyway, what I'm going with is he diversified? I didn't. You have to find your own way. You have to find your own path. Maybe I'm not as talented as Paul in a myriad of other ways.
You're right. You got to find your path.
But you have to find your own path.
And all of you
can tell you what it is.
Yeah, and everybody would, just like with theater, you can list all our stories about how somebody got to Broadway and how they got their first show. You will never match exactly what that person said in theater. Well, it's true with this, too. It's going to be your right place, right time, hit that moment, whatever it is. If you want to do this, you just have to go out there and do it, not worry about how somebody else told you to do it or how they told you to get in. I mean, I've got my ways that I got told my son, and it worked for him. But, everybody has to take their own shot at it. But one of the reasons, again, why I want to live is it proves that anybody can do it. I had a woman groundbreaker.
I didn't mean it that way.
Sorry, I didn't mean it that way. Anyway, I had a groundrigger. A rigger one day came to me early on in the 70s and said, I have a new groundrigger I want to take out. I went, oh, sure, fine, You're the rigger. You get your ground person. He said, it's a woman. And I said, well, okay. That's fine as long as, here are the ground rules. So I got her aside at the rehearsal, and I said, look, here are the ground rules. We're all going to be sleeping on this bus. You got to sleep separately. First time you sleep with one of these guys, it's going to throw everybody in a tizzy because everybody else is going to say, why didn't she sleep with me? So if you fall in love, do it after the tour. That's my only rule. And then I went to the guys and said the same thing to them. I said, I don't care. And she was very pretty, by the way.
Was it Letty?
Huh?
Was it Letty?
Oh, I don't even remember her name now. But anyway, she, I went through too many wives to remember that kind of stuff. Anyway.
Women touring rock riggers I know, too.
Yeah. Yeah. But the point is, I said the same thing to them. You guys, listen to me on this. Don't do it because you're going to throw the whole crewing team spirit off. And as Paul was pointing out in the video, this is something that starts at 4 o'clock in the morning and goes to 2 o'clock in the morning. You can't be divided in your attention that, and with your own people that you're relying on to do their job, to get it done in a specific time, if you're having these kinds of thoughts. And I said, that would be the breaking point. If anybody does it, then we've got to, we've got to break it off. And in fact, it did happen. And, so we had to let her go because it affected the actual getting the show up.
Everybody knows the really crude expression, you don't shit where you sleep.
Yeah. You just
really,
can't.
You don't. And for a woman, I will tell you, it is a career ender. It's not just a gig ender. I'd be surprised if she worked other tours because word will get out. She's in it for the party. She's in it for the ride. Ladies, absolutely not. Ever. Not once. All there is.
Should we go to the next slide?
Sure.
Moving on.
There you go. On the road, what to expect. There you go. Etiquette and common sense. There's some really good ones. Go ahead, Paul. You start.
Well, I kind of wrote down some points here that you have to think about if you're going on the road. And common sense, I think, is key to everything. If you feel it's wrong, chances are it's wrong.
Okay, now I got to tell my story. Okay, David Bowie, first American tour. David comes over. Bob C. and I, in fact, did the tour together. Bob called me and says, hey, I got this British act coming over that the record company wants to do some promotional shows for. And so I flew to New York, and Bob and I, in Altman's shop, literally hodded, if any of you know that term, cable together, because there was no multi-cable in those days, and met the artist in the Waldorf Astoria in his suite. We walked in. I've been in entertainment for quite a while, even at that point. But to walk into a hotel room with a guy with makeup on and high-heeled boots was kind of a shock. So David greets us, talks to us about the thing, and we leave the room, and both of us, shaking our head. Because in that days, the road clothing was boots, a Bowie knife on your side, a work shirt, and jeans. Everybody on the road, that's what we all wore. And here's David with the glam outfit. Glam had just come in. So we go on the road, and the crew that we had were all, with their mouths open, too, because the band was all dressing that way, too. But what they realized very quickly is, guess who got all the girls? Because all the girls were going to save them. Get what I mean, right? So now the crew's all teed off because they ain't getting any. So all of a sudden, I see my guys running around now in high-heeled boots. you know, with the fake British accent, you know, and getting, you know, I was hurt once, you know. Oh, let me help you, dear.
A little bit about house crews and unions. And
say more about the etiquette.
The etiquette?
Yeah.
I can't think
dealing
of,
oh, well.
You got an etiquette story?
You got an etiquette story?
Pass.
Okay. No, the point is, what I was meaning was, it is a job, and you have to face it professionally. One of the things that I used to always tell the crews, too, was, I don't care if you do drugs, I don't care if you drink, but when you show up at 8 o'clock or 9 o'clock in that arena, you got to be straight, and you got to be sober, because you could hurt me. So I'm not your mother. Do what you want to when you're off the clock, but when you're working, you've got to be straight, because somebody's going to get hurt. We work in a very, very dangerous business, and we're very, very lucky that only a few accidents have happened. In fact, I lost my best master electrician a few years ago from an accident. And, an off gig that he was just doing an off thing, somebody made a mistake, and he died for it. So, you know, they do happen, but really, if you look at the man hours, even the guy that was killed under the staging for Madonna, and where was it, England, where the stage wasn't secured yet. I mean, they're very, very rare that anybody dies. And I really believe it's because we do really look at our jobs as being professional, doing the job, doing it right, playing later, playing hard. That's what you saw.
Yep.
Play hard in that time you have. But while you're doing it, understand that that job and the people you're working with are looking at you to be a professional and get the job done safely, on time, worked out in a choreography that everybody works together, and you'll get the job done. That's etiquette to me, too.
So the whole thing about, just want to say something about house crews.
Oh, yeah.
House crews and unions are really your best friend. When you go into the hall in the morning, you look at some unfamiliar faces, and usually by the end of the day, they're your best friends. You know them. Sometimes you've heard their stories, their family stories, and chances are that they're there. Well, I say that with reservations. I mean, we've gotten some crews that, you know, were, you know, seconded by the prison. You know, that's a little different story. But most of the time, the crews are there. They're good. They're qualified. And so you don't really need to over-explain stuff to them. I find a lot of people who go in there, or, you know, particularly younger crew that come in with the road, they think they have to really explain stuff, that these guys are idiots. They're not. Give them the benefit of the doubt that they really know what they're doing, because they like to lay back and watch the fun. You know, if you know, you're going to make an idiot out of yourself, they're going to be the first ones to laugh at you. So,
I've got the segue story for this one.
Okay, good.
I was the idiot who almost killed someone. Not a funny story. Because I didn't explain something carefully enough to someone who should have known better. Mm-hmm. 20 years ago, I went into Madison Square Garden with Luther Vandross. En Vogue was opening. It was a huge tour, selling out every arena in this country and internationally. And I was very young, and I had not yet figured out what my tolerances were. And I came into work hungover. Not drunk, but very, very hungover. The way the show worked at Madison Square Garden is we did a load-in one day. We did a show. It was a Rangers hockey game. We had to strip out all the lighting in the PA and the set. We played in the round. It was a huge loadout, maybe 21 trucks. And then we buried all the motors in the ceiling so they could drop in the hockey nets, reset for hockey. So the second day we came in basically and did a complete load-in from scratch, except for the fact that our rigging was in the air and our tails were still in the power distros. So, the first day, I was absolutely keyed up. I mean, it's Madison Square Garden. It's my first time gigging at the Garden. The thrill goes away quickly, but anyway, it was fun the first day. And it all went smoothly, had a great show, so on and so forth. The electrician's there. It's a complicated system by which the IBEW handles your tail drops and your power up to the first disconnect, and from your disconnect on the IA runs your feeder. So I was still very much new, figuring out this system, wasn't sure who to talk to. It seemed like I was always telling the wrong guy to help me with the cable, and they'd be like, go talk to Tony. Well, Tony just told me to talk to you. And aren't you also Tony? So we load out, and we have a day off in New York City. It was a lot of fun. And the next morning I came in very, very hungover. And we set up the exact same power runs and the exact same distros with the exact same crew we had used 48 hours before. And I did not meter the power where it hit the lighting racks. I'd done it the first day. I had IBEW and IA stagehands. And unbeknownst to me, one of them had taken a green and a blue camlock and swapped them. And my very good friend, Lance Stoner, dove under that 360 aluminum tape deck and hit the steel and was carted away in an ambulance and was unconscious for 19 hours while they saved his life. So, on the one hand, it's easy to oversimplify and overtalk to your crews and tell them information that may be a little insulting. It's a lot worse to almost kill someone. I'd err on the side of being conservative. Explain it twice. He should have known those cam locks, and tying into the story about partying and responsibility, I should have checked it. I don't care who on my crew does the feeder. I at least look at it. Always, always. It is a dangerous business, and you can't party too hard, and you have to talk to your guys down sometimes. So
I take it all back.
There's the big heavy anecdote.
Yeah, it goes well. Yeah. Part of that's relating to your crew. I mean, it's having your immediate crew around you is the best insurance policy you have for everything. And you know, you don't always get along with crew. You don't. There's always going to be one guy on the crew that's going to piss you off, and no matter what you do, he's going to still piss you off. And, but for the most part, if, you know, for Styx and REO Speedwagon, right now, we're touring these bands for, you've been with them 7, 8 years.
Yeah, Styx, he's with REO.
And it's, we can look at each other and pretty much determine what we're thinking.
We can insult each other without words. Just
yeah.
Without it's like, remember that thing you did yesterday? Yeah, yeah. I haven't forgotten.
So, I mean, it's always important to watch each other's backs, too. And, if you're a lighting guy, it's real easy to, ignore the sound guy and, not cater to what he needs. I mean, there's just so many things. Remember those Kinoflow sticks? I used to carry blue Kinoflow sticks, and I put the stick's only about that big. And I put the stick up about 1 inch away from the monitor, and in the front, and I swear to God, the sound guy comes over to me and moves it back. He goes, I don't want you putting that there. I go, why? It deflects the sound. I go, please. It's that big. But, this is stuff you got to get over. It's crazy. Catering and camaraderie. I think the catering room is the best time to actually sit around and become a family with people. And, not only that, but the rock stars come in, they have to eat too. And so it kind of becomes a really good part of the job and family. We can breeze over these other ones. I don't know. I don't want to. I'd love to tell
you.
In terms of catering, something you take for granted, like craft services, right? They're going to feed you 3 meals a day. Don't be fussy. I mean, a rock star gets vegetarian meals. Crew guys, you're kidding yourselves. You'll eat a lot of salad.
Yeah.
I mean, you just don't get to be fussy. The food that's laid out for you week after week after week is what you get to eat. So adjust your mentality right away.
Yeah.
In many of the tours that I did, I was also the production manager in those days, and I really did try to make sure that the crews got variety. And it's been pretty common now that what people try to do is write the riders so that they don't get lasagna 4 days in a row, okay? Yeah, I don't like lasagna anyway. So, you try to vary it. But there's the classic great Chipmunk, who was our ultimate father god of concert lighting, was playing at the Forum in L.A. with the Stones and decided that what would really be cool for the crew is he'd buy them all, really, from a great restaurant, steak sandwiches for lunch, hot steak sandwiches. And the band paid a very high price for this food. The end of the night came, and the IA steward gives him a bill for overtime for no meal break. And he's, what do you mean no meal break? He said, sandwiches are not a hot meal. So.
Yeah. No bending.
Yeah.
Let's go on to this one. What's changed in touring?
Oh, yeah.
Nobody has any comments. We're just completely dead issues for us.
Girls do it. Absolutely. Absolutely. Candace Brightman was mentioned in that video. I've known Candace also for years and years and years. One of the original women, actually, on the road, I would say. Yeah, Candace was a great woman. Ended up marrying her master electrician. And they live in Hawaii now, I think. Are they still married or not?
I don't know.
Oh, I don't know either. But see, she lives in Hawaii now.
They were doing it on the bus, except nobody knew.
Yeah, that was different.
So I'm wrong.
But Bruin did make it in there. My original partner, Marilyn Renegal, was on the road with me back in the early days before she went to Broadway and was with Theron for years. But, it can happen. It's attitude. It's how you approach the job, how you gain the respect of the people around you and doing your job. It has nothing to do with femininity or anything. You don't have to be butch. You don't have, you know, it's not about that. It's strictly about, you gain the respect of the people that are doing the job around you. And after that anymore, I don't think there should be a question about who does what on a tour at all.
I think one of the things we were thinking about when we said what's changed in touring is who owns lighting.
Oh, talk about that.
And yeah. There's quite a good bit about this in the concert lighting book. And what happened is like Jim started off with Sundance Lighting. And it was a really, I don't know if mom and pop by comparison of what it is. It's, you know, I mean, you put this together and you use all your resources and you gain equipment. But Jim is the pioneer of concert lighting. I don't know if all of you know that or not, but he is. And what's happened now is all those little companies that have started up, and if you're in Ohio or, you know, if you're in the Midwest and Oklahoma City or wherever, you know, there's still those companies around. But what happened in the mid-90s is there's a company called PRG that came in. Anybody here work for PRG? Good, I can say it.
Okay.
But what happened is they came in, and they, and as I understand the story, is Jerry Harris had the company in New York.
A set building company. For Broadway, yeah.
And he went to the bank and wanted to increase his business. Well, instead of the bank saying, okay, we'll give you a loan to increase your business, they go, no, we can't do that. But what we can do is give you money to buy other companies, and then that's when the floodgates open. And he just pretty much took out a lot of what we feel is, you know, a real, I don't know, the intimacy of our industry and the feeling of great service and the feeling of being able to call somebody on the phone and have their complete attention and time and service and passion behind it really got turned on its head. And, you know, I think it's really a shame that that happened, but, you know, it's kind of like the big whale that, you know, goes through the ocean and then all the little particles of the big fish that he ate are falling around beside him, and there are, you know, still quite a few really nice companies that have grown out of this, and so it's kind of changed itself back. And,
but PRG is not the only one, of course. Now, you know,
yeah,
that do, and now we've gone into multiple where we're back to where we started, where lighting companies started, and the sound company started, and then some sound companies started to have lighting, and some think of starting to have sound, and we all thought that was terrible because I didn't want to know anything about sound, so I stayed out of that. Bob C stayed out of it with C Factor, but Tom Fields ended up being bought by a sound company in England, and he ended up losing his company. They swallowed him up, and he was gone. So a lot of this buying that's been going on and amalgamation of corporates now, there's good, there's bad. The good is they got the money to put into the new equipment and to play with the new toys. The bad is the smaller companies where you got, a lot of you may get your starts, are not there anymore, and it's harder to get that in because there's only, you know, there's fewer companies. Plus, the new thing is that they'll make deals with the artist manager to provide everything. We tell the artist where to show up. You don't have to worry about anything else. That's the newest gag, right? And that's gotten a lot harder unless you're a named designer. It's made it a lot harder for younger designers to get in because these companies are controlling so much of even the design aspect, let alone the equipment, and it's hurting a lot of the small rental companies too. I know several of them that I've talked to have lost long-standing accounts to this kind of operation. So we're going through a big change corporately and structurally in concerts right now. And
plus,
so,
you don't get the real feeling of the, you know, your boss helping you. You know, it's all a big corporate structure now. So starting off young and trying to get into a corporate company, you know, all of a sudden you're in the entertainment business, but you're going to the time clock to clock in. It didn't used to be like that. I mean, we did it because we love it, we're passionate about it, and we'll stay from, you know, 9 o'clock in the morning until 2 o'clock in the morning. Jim, I remember those days.
Yeah.
Every day.
Yeah.
Every day.
But you know what? It just used to be a much more free feeling about what we do, and I still suppose it's there. You know, I mean, this is still one of the last great businesses where I think that is still available. But, you know, the corporate side, the manufacturers have certainly started to, you know, merge to become more powerful, and a lot of the manufacturers aren't really from the entertainment business that are coming in and buying lighting companies. I think Genlight was one of them, right. Came and bought Very Light. Now, have they sold it again? Very Light's been sold. I've lost track.
I have a piece of good news about what's changed, though. We talked about this at lunch. Good news, something that's changed hugely in 20 years, cell phones.
Oh, I like that. Tell your story.
Cell phones have had an impact that I cannot describe to you sitting here now unless you were on a tour bus 20, 25, 30 years ago. But imagine you left for a tour. You pack your bags, you kiss your girlfriend or your wife, maybe you have a kid.
Or your mistress and your girlfriend. And
your parents, wife, yeah. You leave, and you won't talk to them again except on a payphone or a hotel phone, paying by the minute for 8 weeks. That's one of the reasons our business started this pattern of serial marriages. And it is, unquestionably, it's a pattern in our business, serial marriages. Most guys who do this long enough accrue a collection of ex-wives. That's just how it is. And
she's about to attempt it the other time, so we're going to see.
Yes,
here.
But I am marrying a sound guy who's on tour as much as I am, right. So we think we're going to break the mold.
Right. And he's got a corporate girlfriend.
A sound guy.
Studio executive.
Ooh. Sugar mama.
Oh, right. Yeah, she is. Makes more than he does.
Your cell phones have really made it a lot easier. I mean, you used to be isolated. You'd be on the bus. You'd live with your 10 brothers, and that's it. You'd eat together. You'd play together. You'd drink together on the days off. You'd do the shows together. You'd fight together. And home was 5 minutes at the Holiday Inn on the phone, because back then it was still, you know, $1 a minute sometimes for phone calls.
Yeah,
and
great.
So personal lives suffered, and I know guys who came home from the road to empty houses. Like, not she took her stuff, but, like, empty. Car not in the driveway, new locks, nothing in the windows. You know, she took his cars and his drum kits. What is she going to do with those? Empty. But all of that is kind of getting easier. Cell phones. Skype. Everybody I know Skypes. I know a lot of guys who have young kids who, right before the show, sit at front of house, because there's usually pretty good reception at front of house in the arenas, and they're Skyping the baby. See, daddy's going to work now. It is a much healthier environment for your personal life. That's one of the upsides. In addition to which, the cell phone has completely changed technical troubleshooting on the road. You've got your manuals. You got PDFs of tech sheets. Oh, what's the dip switch address supposed to be if you're going to run those color blazes? Oh, wait, I got it right here. Everyone has apps for this stuff. Focusing still is really not that hot on your phone, despite what the manufacturers tell you, but that's another story. Don't bother. Your day's long enough already. But it used to be if you had problems with a console, you'd have to go to the production office, which might be on the other side of an arena, get on the phone with your tech support, get a list of things to try, go back to your console. I mean, it's inconceivable, right? Nowadays, you're like, hang on a second. Yeah, okay, not that menu. And more got done, and it actually has had a qualitative, quantitative impact on the shows because more things get fixed. Nowadays, a guy can talk you through changing, you know, if you have to, a flash drive out of your MA or something like that on the phone. And you can do in an hour something you couldn't have done in 3 days running back and forth to the production office. So there's been an actual physical effect. The quality of shows has gone up because the resource is in the palm of your hand. It is true that more or less in current rock and roll touring, the iPhone owns the world, just the way it is. Again, I don't know why, but it's changed everything. Personal life is getting easier. Teching is getting easier. Skype and cell phones, that's what's changed in touring.
I just need to digress for just a second. About when you said the guys that come home and the girlfriend has mm-hmm. taken everything out mm-hmm. of the house, I have a quick story. This is killing me. I got to tell you. This is before cell phones, okay. The guy, he comes home, he's trying to call his girlfriend at home. He can't get in touch with her. And so he ends up getting dropped off at the cab near the bar close to his apartment. He just drops his bag, sits at the bar, and starts chatting with this other guy. The other guy starts describing how this wonderful relationship he's had and everything ends up, he described his girlfriend in his apartment. I swear to God, true story. It wasn't me.
So I shouldn't tell the Frank Zappa story?
Which one's that?
Okay. All right. I'm on the road with Frank Zappa. We did a New Year's Eve show to end the tour at LA Coliseum. I come home, obviously it's like 5 o'clock in the morning by the time we got the show, because New Year's show, obviously we went late. Get up in the morning, and I have two young children, and I'm watching the Rose Parade on television with them, when my wife, who I hadn't seen probably in 9 months, comes in and says, I'm going shopping. And I go, yeah. Takes me about 2 hours to realize there's no shopping on New Year's Day. That was wife one.
How many weeks later did you say she was gone?
2 weeks later. Yeah.
That's good.
Yeah, she didn't even say goodbye. She just said, I'm going shopping. So yeah. I ended up with the kids. And,
yeah, you were home to take care of the kids?
Yeah.
She was out of there.
He was gone.
Moving on.
Oh, this is good. Yes. I like this.
This is a schedule. Recently...
This is real. You didn't make it up.
This is not... This is I took this, copied it from an email recently of a schedule for REO Speedwagon, just to give you an idea of what our day's like. This one was quite unusual. Can everybody see that? See, unfortunately, this is not a joke. This is for real.
This is from his production manager, right?
Yeah, from our production manager to us. He goes, just take a moment to start digesting this. So you can see up there, a 5:20 a.m. load-in call for a 6
lobby
o'clock...
call.
Yeah, lobby call for a 6 o'clock load-in. Now, normally we only go in maybe 10, 11 o'clock. I mean, it isn't because we're, you know, like to sleep in or anything like that. It's just that, you know, that's just how the day goes. That's normally, it's a 10 o'clock day. So then, the reason is, as you can see from 10:30 to 12, orchestra performs on stage. Now, this was the whole crux of it. So you got two bands before REO starts, and orchestra performs on stage. So here's the sound check. He goes, the promoter called me today to tell me the orchestra was performing in the AM. So he forgot to mention several weeks back when we spoke. So in addition to all of this, we're going into one of those venues where you can see that now, you know, check the vendors because confidence is not too high. This is the sort of stuff we go into where the vendors are a little bit iffy. The information flow is not exactly what it should be. But anyway, I just thought it would be
sometimes
good.
Sometimes you show up, and he was not exaggerating. If you play the Scope in Virginia, mm-hmm. stagehands wear bright orange jumpsuits that say in big black letters on the back, Sheriff McCabe's Workforce.
Yeah.
Their crew chief carries a rifle. You see this stuff all the time.
Hey, you know what? But some of those guys are really... I trade them for a union stagehand sometimes.
That's the best thing they'll do in like a month.
Yeah, they're really good.
Sometimes your call for 16 stagehands and 8 loaders turns out to be 11 college students at the University of Northern Illinois. None of whom
not
have
good.
Ever, never lifted a road case before. Can't lift. You tell them, okay, count on the lift. You might as well be speaking German.
Yeah.
I mean, they don't know what the lift is. They don't know what the count is. Somebody's getting hurt. It's best if really you just look the other way or leave the premises. So when you have to give your deposition, you could say you didn't see the shit go down.
Now, this is all for the glamour. I kind of titled this because, you know, it's a little bit tongue-in-cheek because as we can dispel the notion that, you know...
We're not glamorous?
This is no glam job. I mean, the peripheral is, and the rock stars get out there, and they do all the interviews, and they get the applause and all that stuff, but we're just backstage trying to make a living and doing the best job that we can, and that's kind of where we're at with this.
Usually filthy.
Yeah.
What, quit showbiz?
I don't get that dirty anymore.
I read the brochure. It said, you know, travel the world, meet interesting people, deal with fascinating technical problems. It never said, never sleep, eat bad food, and be dirty 23 hours a day.
And be lonely.
Yeah.
Well, what about the show where the night before was the Cattlemen's Convention? And you try to pick up your forehead after the show, and it smells for 2 weeks.
Yeah.
I picked up feeders so gross outside the bullpens, outside the rodeos, that you look around, and if you're lucky, you find an open fire hydrant. Crack the fire hydrant and have the forklift park like a pallet of feeder right in front of it, and just let the fire hose blast the manure out of it.
Yeah, we were on the bus one day, and all the crews just were pulling in at 7 or 8 o'clock in the morning to Greeley's Stampede. And you played this place, right? The Greeley Stampede is actually horses in the arena rink. They're seating all around like it's a real amphitheater and everything, but it's not. And so the horses, they got to keep the dirt soft all day long because that's what the horses' hooves like. In the meantime, the stage is off to the side, and we build the stage, we put all the equipment on the stage and completely set it up for show. And at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, the horse show is over, and they get these tractors, and the tires are like 12 feet high. I've never seen anything like this before in my life. And the tractors pull the stage onto the horse rink. This day, it started to rain. I mean, to tell you, we got the stage into position, but it rained so hard. And the rain was just the warm-up act for the hail. It came out. And we're all underneath the blue tarps, and people are covering up the equipment with tarps and Visqueen, and people are taking the squeegees and getting it off the stage. This is glamour. This is glamour to its fullest. And the show, I mean, it was Joan Jett and REO Speedwagon, and the show actually happened. For whatever reason, the skies became clear, and 5,000 people showed up that night. It was pretty remarkable, but at the end of the night, everybody left, and I've never seen so many shoes stuck in the mud from people walking in. They just gave up and just kept walking. So, you know, and by the way, it rained on Loadout, which is really fun.
There's a reality check. If it rains on Loadout, on everything, your shit is going in the truck wet. You better hope you have a show the next day where you can pull it out and dry it out. The racks, the electronics, the instruments, all of it, it's going to be wet. Marley left wet, rolled up for 2 or 3 days. Yeah. Yeah, you get me now.
So I had this side story to this. There was some scenic pieces I just had made, and they stretched on these frames, and they were beautifully painted. But when it started to rain, even though it didn't get wet, the humidity in the air started to get onto the frames, and the scenic pieces were Velcroed on the frames. Well, didn't you know, when it started to dry out, they shrunk. This is like the first day I'm using them. I'm like, oh, my God. Anyway, I was stretching like crazy and blow dryers out there. Let's talk about...
with the dressing rooms, what to expect?
In the dressing room?
Oh, dude.
You got a story for the dressing room?
Oh, no, you tell a story for the dressing room.
Did I have one? Remind me, which one was that?
Okay, I'll do one. while you're thinking.
I couldn't read your mind there, Libby.
I was thinking of the turkey dinner.
The turkey dinner?
Kevin and the turkey dinner getting thrown out in the hall.
Oh, I didn't remember that.
Gaz, you weren't there for
that.
Yeah,
I wasn't there.
Sorry.
I've got an Elton story where he threw sushi against the wall.
Oh, yeah. Well, we've all had food thrown against walls and unhappy artists. But if you're playing the arenas, You know, you're going to get the nice dressing rooms. The road manager's going to get the nice dressing room for the band. And in many cases, they're either going to be carrying furniture. I have had bands that carry whole furniture, living rooms, you know, whole setups. And other places where it's just in the rider that they've got to put drapes up around the lockers and stuff, different things. But the crew, of course, gets what's ever left over. And it's usually the smelly locker that hasn't been cleaned in three, the visitor locker that hasn't been cleaned. And sometimes we get a little upset about that. And there's been some things done to dressing rooms like that we shouldn't talk about. But it's just the stress of doing the job and not having the time off and knowing that you got to turn around and do it the next day. You just have to watch. You understand. You're working in a – this is not – you know, you're not playing – I'm trying to think of a good theater around the country that has nice artist dressing rooms in that. You know, most of the places we play – are going to be in arenas. They're going to be in, you know, in sports arenas and purpose-built buildings that were not meant to be entertainment venues originally. So don't expect your backstage accoutrements to be what you might expect. You're going to have to live with it, and that's what it's going to be. You know, luckily, maybe you'll get clean towels to take your shower. Hopefully, they don't smell. If you're real lucky, you talk the people into letting you use the washer and dryer, the team's washer and dryer, to do your laundry. That's always a plus because you save that money
get
that you were talking about. Get a receipt.
Make up a receipt for it.
You make up a receipt for it. But one of the things you want to do is in the rider, you always put down, you know, you want certain beverages and that in the dressing room. Well, if you're real smart, what you do is you put stuff on the rider that you're really not going to use, but it's barter. For the stagehands. So you put stuff on the rider that, you know, can give me a give me if the promoter really gets hanky about it and doesn't want to do it. But at least you've got some stuff on there that you can do. Well, my story is that early on I didn't realize this, but I was in a venue and I while the crew was loading out, I went out and bought 4 cases of beer for the crew. I thought I was being a really nice guy. I walk back in with it just as they're finished and put it down and go, here you go, guys. And they all looked at me and went, that there's non-union beer. It was Coors. I didn't know that Coors was non-union. They would.
Oh. Finally.
Just to clarify, some of you may not quite get all this talk about the showers. We haven't had...
With what?
It's not just us. There's an issue with the whole building and the lights.
Oh, great.
Imagine that.
The ceiling fixing it. So.
Oh. Here you go. I have my light with me.
That's right. The miracle of the cell phone. Yeah. Some of the facts of life. Typically, your laundry. I mean, these are just basic questions you may have. You wonder how you live like this. If you're lucky, you can do your laundry in the venues at machines. Typically, you bring your laundry in the morning of a show and drop it off in the production office with a $20 bill in it, and the day's runner takes it and has it washed and folded for you. Everything will get washed together, always in cold water, and everything's going to turn funny colors, but that's how you get clean clothing. Sometimes on a day off in a hotel, you can do it, but lots of days off are 1,000-mile drives on a bus. The days off where you're supposedly in a hotel, it is not infrequent that you arrive at 6 or 8 or 10 o'clock at night. For your day off, having been spent entirely on a tour bus or in an airport, you don't always get to do your laundry on a day off. You need things like envelopes and stamps. You'll have a production manager who will have a heavily stocked production office box that will supply these things for you. You don't have a way to get paper. You don't have a way to, you know, you got to send something out with a stamp. They will take care of this for you. In a similar vein, there's always something called a runner's list. You can go in, and these are just... Some managers are more hard-ass about it than others, but you go in, and if you need something in the morning, you write it on there. You don't get to leave the gig to go shopping. You may have 10 shows in a row and be out of toothpaste. So, you write down, I need a tube of toothpaste. Someone needs a carton of cigarettes. Somebody's asking for a bottle of Jack Daniels. Somebody needs an extra-sized bottle of Excedrin. You have a means of getting this stuff. You supply the money, and you just put your item on a list. Sometimes you even get what you asked for. You shower at the end of the night when the gig is done. Three things happen at the end of the night when the gig is done if it's not a party night. One, there's always a meal called bus food. It's a hot meal. It's served on the bus. It's just called bus meal, and it's your
fourth. Or bus pizza.
Bus pizza. But bus food, it's your fourth meal of the day because dinner was 7 hours ago. You're entitled to a hot meal at 1 o'clock or 2 o'clock in the morning when your trucks are done. That's very standard. Then you shower, then you have a cocktail. Showers, as he was saying, are typically in the locker rooms of arenas, sometimes in amphitheaters like Jones Beach. They're even worse.
Mm. Do you carry your own security guard now, too, for your showers? Libby's surrounded by men, you know.
If I had a dime for every time I've been walked in on, it was like, yeah, get out. Everybody walks in on everybody else. You just get over it. Everybody's seen each other naked. Sometimes, not infrequently, the guys all have to take the gang showers in the big sports arenas. You know, otherwise politically incorrectly known as...
I got a spotlight.
There you go. And the spots are on, you know. The big gay crew shower happens all the time. Just get over it. If you've got a wart in a funny place, everyone will know about it by day 4 of the tour. So those are just the basic facts of life. How you get toothpaste, how you shower, these kind of things.
And there will be embarrassing pictures of you at the end of the tour.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
One way or the other. Like sleeping, like you were saying, with drool coming out of your mouth. Yeah. Or, you know, the bent over butt shot, the crew guy with the pants, you know.
You know, I think we're painting such a black picture of the road. Nobody's going to want to go. How many want to go on the road?
But this goes to it. Your per diem. You understand per diem is income? It is not free money.
Is it?
Once upon a time.
People don't think about this. She was saying about a CPA. Absolutely. Absolutely pay some. It's worth the money. At least get them to explain to you what you should keep records of, you know, in your type of work and what you can get away with. But per diem is money, so don't think you get a salary and this free money called per diem. IRS wants to know what you did with that money. That's the other reason you want to keep receipts. Okay, so it's not free money. But if you play your cards right, you can get through the tour with only spending the per diem and not spending any of your salary unless you're a real drunk. And even if you're a real drunk, you can probably get away with it because you're drinking the band's booze. But, you know, look at that money as you've got to account for it. So don't, you know, just think that this is, you know, free money and that you can, spend it any way you want to. You can, but you're going to have to account for it.
This is one of those loopholes, Jim, and I probably shouldn't say this, but I will.
Okay.
But, you know, when you get money, if at the end of the year somebody doesn't give you a piece of paper that says that you got the money.
Okay.
You don't go to the IRS and say, I volunteer that I got that money. You don't do that.
I'll disagree because I got caught. What happens? Now, I get the early. What happens is they'll tell you that anything under $600, they don't have to report, right? So you don't put it in your taxes. They reported it. They don't have to report it. But watch it. Somebody gives you a check for $400, $500, $600 tax-free, means you get the whole cash, you do it as a subcontractor. They still could turn that in. And if they do, the IRS is going to look at your return and want to know why you didn't account for it. Now, take that chance, pay a little fine, sure. You know, but they, you watch it. They will catch things like. One other thing, and quick on business, subcontracts. There's a big... And we cover this a lot in the book because it's a real issue with me and I teach this stuff, is we all think we're subcontractors when we go out as designers and we get a contract and say, I get, you know, $5,000 for this design and X number of dollars a week. That we're a subcontractor, not by the IRS. The IRS has very stringent rules of what defines you as a subcontractor. And I'll blow you out of the water right now. You know what the first rule is? If your employer can tell you what time and where to be, you are not a subcontractor. Now, is that our jobs? Sure, we got to be at the show at a certain time, don't we? Here's the loophole. There's also a regulation in the IRS that says, I always forget the right words, industry standard or industry practices. Since our industry's practice is that we do this and put ourselves out as subcontractors, you can get away with it, but it's at the IRS's discretion. So you can say you're a subcontractor or you have a business. But the best way to do it is form a business, and this is what all the stars do. Star does not get paid directly. They get paid to their corporation, and then they're what is called a loan out back to the job. So they're actually being employed by a company. The company has been employed by the promoter or whatever, right? So that's how they get away with it, and then they just draw a salary or take, you know, whatever money they want to out of the corporation. It's really something that you should all look at, too. Form a corporation, especially in most states, an LLC now is the best way to do it, but some states don't allow it. I think almost all states allow LLCs now. Limited liability corporations, which means the money you put into the company to start it or the money that's in it is all you can be taken for in a lawsuit. They can't go after your home or anything like that if you haven't put that home in the company. So now you, in fact, are not being hired by REO Speedwagon. Your
Masterworks.
Masterworks for Paul is who's being hired. And then Paul, as an employee of Masterworks, has been basically told by his boss, who can be him, yeah, show up to this gig at this time. Okay? That's the way to do it. You do that?
Actually, I don't, but okay. Exactly what Jim just described with the corporate, I mean, that's universal for rock bands. So right now I'm out with the band Styx. Every member of the band Styx and I and every member of the road crew draws a salary from a company called TMB Productions, LLC, out of Woodland Hills, California. They have formed an entity that is paid by the promoters for the shows, and everyone, band and crew, is paid from the same organization. So you can see how that LLC provides a buffer for us. I, in this case, am not a contractor at all. I'm an actual W-2 employee.
That's different.
Again, yeah. You need to talk to your accountant and find out what's best. Being a 1099 employee can be a tax liability of up to an additional 49%. In English, if Styx wants to hire me tomorrow on a 1099 instead of as an employee, they will have to up my pay 49% for me to have the same amount of money in my pocket. So when someone offers to pay you, it's also not just how much you're getting a week. Very clearly, the first question when they say, we're going to offer you this, the answer is not great. The answer is that on a 1099 or a W-2? Universes apart and really important. This is business. This is the dry and boring part, but it's like saving your per diem. You get 2 years dispensation to drink your per diem. After that, save it, because someday you're going to have a mortgage to pay out of this. We're not playing at this. This is a career. This is your lifelong profession. You don't get to pack up your toys at the end of the tour and say, well, I'm tired of being a rock and roll roadie now. I think I'll go have a real job, because you won't be fit for anything else. So you better find a way to make this pay, because after 5
That's
or
right.
10 or 20 years, you have no other options.
You will be
I'm a college professor now.
Most of us are not that smart.
The rest
tenure,
of
it, too.
The rest of us are unemployable.
That's right.
When you, like, I have a friend who was a great, great programmer on consoles, but he always had this very tongue-in-cheek thing. He was in his late 40s when I knew him, and Brad used to say, I just have nightmares. I keep waking up thinking, what else can I do? What else can I do? Because all I know how to do is this. He said, I have visions that my next job will be, do you want fries with that? This is all I know.
We got about 20 minutes.
Great.
Bus stories.
Good stuff, yeah.
Yeah, we got the good stuff. Bus stories, sightseeing.
You mean, like the girl that's trussed up in the back of the bus by the rigger?
Happens all the time.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. I have a great laundry story, though.
Okay.
We were in Malmo, in Sweden. Malmo, Sweden. Day off. First day off in several weeks. And the plan was that a couple of us would go down and find out from the front desk where the laundry was. So there was no laundry in Malmo, but there was in the next town over. And I can't remember the name of that. But they go, it's a 20-minute train ride. So we thought, cool, we're on a day off. We'll just take the laundry, and we'll get on the train, and we'll go to the next town, we'll do our laundry and have lunch, and it'll be great, and then we'll come back. Didn't happen that way. We got to the town, the lunch part happened, but I ended up taking the laundry to, instead of a self-serve, the only way they could do it is if they did it. But we ran out of time, and so because I didn't have to do the load-in, because I'm a famous lighting designer, I volunteered to go back to the town and get the laundry and the next morning. Well, what I didn't realize was when I got on the train to go back to get the laundry is I didn't have any kronen left. And so that's money. And so what I had the train ticket that I could buy there, and they're so honest in Sweden. I mean, if there's no traffic on the street and there's a red light, they won't cross the street. You know, I mean, they're like that. So for that reason only, I could be really dishonest and get away with it. So I took the train ticket, and I used it to get there. And when I got there, I still didn't have any money except for to pay for the laundry. And so I'm going through all the streets into banks trying to get to American Express to get some cash, and I couldn't do that. This is before ATMs. And so I ended up getting back on the train without a train ticket. And by the way, I'm slugging around these two huge bags of laundry all through the streets of this little town. It was just crazy. And so I got on the train, and when I got to the train, I convinced the taxi driver to take me to the gig, which I could get some money for it.
I'm still hung up on the before ATMs part.
I know.
I just heard that. I'm like,
before cell phones.
Yeah,
ATMs.
We were before cell phones, too. So
I get into the venue, and the stage manager at the time, he just looks at me. I told him the story. I just was so frustrated, and he just looks at me and goes, "Oh, you should have told me, mate. I did mine here." Okay. Great.
While you have border crossings up on the screen, I want to hit that really, really fast. Yeah. The funny story is that my fiance will tell the story of crossing over the Iron Curtain and getting woken up. Border and customs agents routinely walk on the bus, sometimes with drug dogs. And you're supposed to, they'll tell you whether you're supposed to get up and go to the customs room or stay in your bunk. They're doing a head count to make sure you're not smuggling bodies. And he remembers being woken up by someone using the muzzle of his machine gun to pull the curtain aside on his bus, shine a flashlight in his face, using the machine gun to close the curtain again. Whatever customs agents instruct you to do, you should do rigidly.
Yeah, because cavity searches can really be.
Number two.
Not saying.
There's a term called cleaning the bus. Before you hit any border, especially the U.S.-Canadian border, the driver will tell you to clean the bus. That means don't leave pot seeds or any other paraphernalia anywhere it can be found. These days, international law, particularly across the U.S.-Canada border, stipulates that if they feel like it, they come on the bus, they find paraphernalia with residue in it or pot seeds, God forbid you've got a bindle or something worse, they can seize all the property on the bus and seize the bus itself. You will be on the hook for a $750,000 coach, not the band, if they find it in your bunk. So the driver will say, "Hey, we got a border crossing tonight, clean the bus." So if you get down hard, because you got to be clean when you cross the border. You know what I'm saying?
There's this one guy who, we were on this boat, and it went from Sweden back into England, and the guy carried pot in his, he's got a little fanny pack on here with his passport and everything like that, and the border crossing immigration, he goes, "Let me see your passport," and he gave him the passport, and the guy's looking at the passport, and he's going, looking around, and sure enough, he just goes, "Come with me." That was it. The cavity search started at that point. But how stupid to take your passport in with your pot.
Mine was early on, very early on, one of the first things, because we start out with motorhomes and even cars and things. And the stories of leaving cars at airports and running through the airport and throwing the keys sort of toward, you know, the counter are legendary, and getting back and having the accountant say, "I got a bill for two cars from Hertz, you know, that you apparently never turned in." Oh, yeah, they were on the road about a mile from the airport. They ran out of gas. Yeah, did that a lot. But anyway, so we're on a bus, and we're Canadian border, and everybody was kind of warned, but it wasn't that strange at that time. The agent gets on the bus. It's late. Everybody's tired. And the first agent on the Canadian agent on the bus just walks in and says, "So where do you guys hide the pot?" And one of the roadies goes, "You're a little too out of it for that, you know."
I want to tell them about the new DUI thing. It's really only about four years old. Really serious business here. If you're going to do any touring, they didn't used to care what your record was. Canada cares profoundly now if you have DUIs. Profoundly. How much this can weigh on your day-to-day conscience about not getting behind the wheel loaded? Well, it's a stupid jackass thing to do anyway. But seriously, it can have an impact you can't imagine on your career. For years, they didn't care. Now they're at the point where I personally know guys who have to get off the tour bus in Buffalo and stay there for a couple of days while the tour goes out without them and does the Canadian dates because they cannot cross the Canadian border with a DUI. There is a red flag on their name. They are not admitted. Of course, they're also on the hook for the cost of flying out the replacement guy to cover their gig for 3 days. Some places will not hire you if you cannot do a clean border crossing, and there's usually some kind of legal code if you get a contract, or a manager may just say to you, do you have any border crossing issues? That's code for have you ever had a DUI. It will prevent you from getting tours. It will prevent you from being hired by vendors who send you across. You know, you can't work for upstaging if you can't cross the Canadian border. So serious as a heart attack here. This is a new thing that's only happened in the last couple of years. They will pull you off the bus for a DUI. Truck drivers are losing their jobs because they had a DUI 20 years ago and you used to be able to post a bond. That's how you got away with it if you were like a driver. Yeah, I've been sober 20 years. You'd give them a $1,000 bond. You'd get it when you came back across the border. Not anymore. So be aware of that. A DUI is a really serious issue. Interestingly, as far as I know, only the U.S.-Canadian border has that wrinkle.
Yeah, I'm going to go to the next slide, but I'm going to ask. Yeah. I'm going to add something to this. When you travel internationally, we have a pretty liberal society when it comes to being, you know, traveling domestically and going across state lines, and with DUIs or just how we carry ourselves. But when you travel internationally, just bear in mind that you're in a different country. Please have respect for their laws. Pay attention to their laws. Pay attention to what they're asking you. Because we have a lot of tendency to just kind of think we can skate by, and we can't there. It's just so important.
Because you're just a cog in that wheel. And like you said, if you're not there, you throw off the whole teamwork and the load into the show in that. So you're pissing a lot of people off.
Yeah.
It isn't just that you lost the gig for the day. You've affected the show itself.
So we got 10 minutes.
I put up chicks for free.
Oh, yeah, chicks for free.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, this
or guys for free.
I'm convinced.
Why would you want a free guy? Something's wrong with the merchandise. You know what I'm saying? Speak for yourself.
You know, I'm convinced that I'd be a millionaire if it wasn't for women and children right now. I just had way too much fun on the road. That's all there is to it.
This whole slide could just be subtitled, yes, it still happens.
Yeah, it does. Yeah, it still happens. I mean, you know.
But watch as a crew. You may think you're scoring. You give her the backstage pass, and the first time you turn around, she's in the band's dressing room.
Yeah. Yeah, seldom do the girls do you to get to the band.
No. There was one, well, we won't talk about it.
Courtesy on the bus is typically if someone has pulled a girl, they will go to the back lounge and close the door. Always, always knock on the door of the back lounge if it's closed. Just knock on it.
Yeah, good one. I think we talked a lot about
we did the hotel incident. Oh, no, let me tell the Eagles one. Okay, so we got bored on the first Eagles tour, who are the real Eagles, not the band that you see out there now who only has two members who are assholes. Other than that, the original band was great. Anyway, Glenn Frey was, I won't use that term, but you know what I'm about to say. And he had girls every night. Well, the rest of us got kind of teed off because he always, you know, have girls. So we were in a Holiday Inn on the second floor. We had the whole second floor. And I guess the management felt nobody else should be around us. You know, we were scum rock and rollers. Well, there was an ice machine at the end of the hall, as there are in all Holiday Inns. And we decided we'd throw ice cubes at each other in the hallway. Well, that was kind of fun.
Yeah.
And then somebody said, let's get Glenn. So we emptied the ice machine into everything we could find, got to Glenn's door, did the 1, 2, 3, broke the door in, and threw all this ice on him and this girl naked in the bed. Actually, Glenn thought it was very funny. So he came out, bare-ass naked, headed for the ice machine, got there, and of course there was no ice. But there was a fire hose. So he turned the fire hose on and started squirting us all down the hall. Pretty soon, the hotel manager shows up. Everybody freezes. We're waiting, because we're waiting for the police to show up at both ends, right? And the guy really, I give him credit, said, are you through? And everybody kind of looked around and went, yeah. Now, Richard Fernandez, who was a great road manager, I knew him both through Rod Stewart, my days with him, and with the Eagles. Richard was a great, very quiet road manager who always had a briefcase, one of the thin ones, the old, you know, executive briefcases. And when we'd go to leave a hotel, Richard would go down to the manager, and he'd take the briefcase. He would unlatch it, lift up the lid, turn it around, which was always full of cash, and just stand there and let the guy take whatever he wanted. Close the case up, say thank you very much, and
which
leave.
That's the only reason we're allowed in hotels still.
That's the only way you could get back in the hotel. So, in a limited amount of hotels. Now, everybody knows, anybody from Seattle? Know the Edgewater Hotel, do you? Right. Out of the Edgewater Hotel, which is on the edge of the water, they actually used to get, I don't know if they still do it, gave you fishing line to fish for sand sharks. And you would catch these things, you'd put water in the bathtub, and they'd stay alive for a few hours, and that was fun, catching sand sharks. But you get bored doing that. So you'd open the windows, which opened over the water, and somebody would decide an ashtray skip on the water really good. So you'd start skipping all the ashtrays. Well, you'd go through the ashtrays pretty quickly, and then it was tables, chairs, you know, whatever else, beds, you know. And the hotel is built in kind of a V with the lounge in the center. And one night, the manager is literally watching out the window as his furniture is floating by the window. And it's the same thing. Richard goes down in the morning, turns the briefcase around, opens it up, lets the guy take what he wants. And thank goodness the managements in both cases understood whatever Richard said was taken was, you know, he was a very honest kid. And we got away with that for years with both of those bands just by doing that. They also, Richard, well, Rod Stewart, they love to paint the, Ronnie Lane liked to paint rooms purple. So Ronnie's roadie would carry cases of purple spray paint. And Ryan would go to a room and just paint the whole room purple. And Richard come down with the briefcase. But, I mean, these stories are funny, but the truth is, especially in the early days, as I said earlier, the bands could not take this money home. The tax rate was, what, 89% or something? So they were out there to promote the record sales, which were set to an offshore corporation somewhere, right? So the money the band made couldn't be done with anything else but spend anyhow. So that's why, one, our fees were high and we made a lot of money because they couldn't take it home anyway. We could do what we could with the equipment, but that's that gave the band their fun, is to do this kind of silly stuff, you know, to keep themselves sane so that they could go home and have it. As you saw, a lot of you saw in the early video what Guy said, you know, when you come home, the decompression and all that is tremendous. And it did affect a lot of families, and it did affect a lot of our marriages and that, until we found we could really have lives beside the road. I did 80 or 67 days in a row with one day off. Arena shows. And what did we do on the day off? We played baseball against a local radio station. Why? Because we knew if we stayed in bed, we'd have never gotten up. You had to just keep that, you know, it just becomes a mental, you know, acuity of just doing it, doing it, doing it, doing it, doing it, until you stop. But
five,
it's fun.
We have 5 minutes. We
got 5 minutes. Questions? Thank you very much. Oh, no. No, we got. Oh, God. Those we can't tell. yeah, no, we can't go there. Privately, maybe. Yes. Ooh.
All the time.
Yeah, but I don't. I'm an old fart. I can't do that stuff. But
you see this picture up here on the right-hand side? Can you see it back there? That was all pre-visualized in WYSIWYG. And that show was in Abu Dhabi with Aerosmith last November. The reason that it could look like that at the end of the show, by showtime, was the fact that it was visualization. And I got to, it was around the Grand Prix race. Beyoncé started, Jamiroquai was the second night, Kings of Leon was the third night, and Aerosmith closed the show. So while Kings of Leon was on, from 1 o'clock in the afternoon, their sound check and setup, I was in a back room with a visualizer all the way up till about midnight when they left the stage, and then I stayed from midnight to 7 o'clock doing it real time. So for one show, but visualizer's huge, huge advantage.
Nope, nobody can afford to put the lighting rig up at trim height in a shop anymore. You might, if you're really lucky, get 2 or 3 days to hammer on it after it's been prepped before they throw it in the truck. But you're doing a real tour. I mean, you're talking weeks worth of work. So I haven't done a tour in years where I didn't do, you know, 4, 5, 6 days of previs, even if you were going to get your hands on the lighting rig before.
It's really accurate, too. It's really good.
Well, I know there is, but actually my answer is I was the first one to take a computer console down the road. I took number two Strand Century light palette on the road. And the first time I got to use it other than in my office was I went to the airport in London to pick it up. I had this wonderful case made with nice wheels and everything, and it came zipping out of the air freight office upside down. The guy screeched to a stop, and the case slid off upside down. I didn't even know if it was going to work when I got to the arena. But I'm a big believer in console. And I got a lot of crap from my fellow designers because we were all really doing the play the music kind of thing. But I was convinced that we could do them, you know, in using a computer and building cues and doing that, but also finding ways that you can still make it fresh and keep up with the band. But some bands, you'd be surprised how many bands want it exactly the same way every night. And you may think they're spontaneous, and they're not. They may give that impression. Rod Stewart was one of those who was famous for it. Everybody thought he couldn't even remember the words of the song, but he knew every move that he was going to do. Ronnie Lane didn't. He wouldn't even know he was on stage, but you know, he still doesn't. But Rod, very, very showman, you know, and knew that stuff. Other bands I worked with, you know, you'd go both ways. I think as band gets older, and I'm going to hear that from these guys, I'm really curious because they're working with two older bands. Are they more in that groove of doing it exactly the same way?
Pretty much.
Yeah.
Very, very much for Styx. I mean, it's like the Rod Stewart thing, exactly cue to cue every night. So much so that I even have spare pages of cue to cue fictional songs in case they throw something in. We've discussed before, how do you want me to handle this? You know, I've got hot and cool verse and chorus and bridge and guitar solo and walk-off and vamp looks because they want it to look that precise. The real advantage that not having to think about improvisation live gives you is that there's a tool in the room, especially in the big arenas, that has to be improvised, and that's called the follow spot. And if your show is codified in a cue-to-cue theater stack sequence, you can do art with the follow spots. You can adjust their intensities. You can move them. You can compensate for flaws in them, and you can do artsy tricks that you can't do if you're still trying to find that, where's that really cool fly I just wrote? So having this part locked in frees you to use whatever tools. Maybe you're doing clubs, and some of them have mirror balls, and some have strobes, some of them have pyro effects. You can use those other things on the fly because this part of your brain is not really occupied.
Go. I can do it, but go ahead. Take a shot. You guys haven't been theater that much, right?
Just theater degrees.
I have. I was one of Jules Fisher's apprentices on Broadway. Besides, so I've been done the theater track. I've done over 300 equity shows as theater. To me, there's no difference. It's all theater. It's just shorter scenes. Isn't it? That's all it is. You know, you have a day scene, you have a night scene. You know, have a morning scene, have a, you know, right, indoor scene, outdoor scene. It's the same thing, and the trick is not to do 10 blue scenes in a row, right? You know, even if the song sounds like that. It's the same process, reading the, you know how we read the script three times and do all that Okay, you're just doing the same thing musically. How do you see the music? How do you feel the music? What is the artist's input to it, if the artist even gives you any? So there's not any difference there, and it's all about timing. It's if you can do musicals, you can do rock and roll. Now, how do you get the job? Well, in most cases, it's going to be working in their shop, building cable, and going through that process, hopefully working for a small company that allows you to get out there and do a one-off gig and get your feet wet, take your shot. For my son in L.A., what I told him to do is get a job driving the rental truck, because that way you go to the venues to drop off the equipment, and you say to the guy, the head electrician or the designer, hey, do you mind if I come back tonight and watch you work? And they'll get you a pass. So you can start making those contacts, you know, and meeting those people and, you know, hopefully being in the right place at the right time for something to come along.
Yeah, there's no silver bullet to say what you do. You just have to really want it, be persevering enough to go for it and get yourself out there.
As far as the steps from initial lighting design to first load in really fast, like bullet point format, you come up with a design of what you want. A collaboration of you and the management bids it out to vendors. I'm painting in the broadest possible strokes
Sure.
here. A vendor is selected, usually not by you. Then somewhere in that process, you often have to go through a budgetary, you know, what do they call it, economy designing. You'll have to pad your design with some things that you're willing to let go of pretty easily because they're going to make you cut it. Ultimately, you'll have a finalized plot. This is usually no more than several weeks before a tour starts. Usually, you can start months out. The plot's usually finalized 3 weeks before a tour. Then they build it. You go, theoretically, to your visualizer site. You do your design work. At home, you have done your own cue sheets, your own notations, whatever paperwork will enable you to really rock through that cueing process. Either in visualizer, or if you're lucky enough to get the rig, you use your rig. At some point, you do that combination of cueing. When you walk into the first day, there may be a rehearsal day. There may often not be. With a really polished band, a huge band, U2 will rehearse for 3 weeks. Rush will rehearse for a month. Paul or I will go in, and we have to fight to get a rehearsal day, even if they've got new material. You walk in. It may be the first time you've seen the rig from the vendor, or it may not. You go in, you load in your disc, you hope it reads correctly, and you'll probably get a couple run-throughs with the band, and then it's doors. Have a nice tour.
Just real quick, because I know we're out of time, but Jeff Rabbits, who was going to be here, and she knows what Jeff does, especially for working for Bruce Springsteen all these years, what he'll do is, in rehearsal, he'll basically get a cue to start the song and a cue to end the song, and make sure he does all the songs, because the one thing you don't want to do is do a really nice job on the first song, and then have nothing for any of the other ones. So Jeff is really, he's anal retentive is what he is. And he really knows how to do this. And then he just then starts building in the center, building in the bigger points, and getting down to the finer points and finer points as he gets time. Because we get so little time. Yeah. And by the way, the thing on the plot, when it goes out to bid, you may have put Verilight number sixes on your plot, and then they call you and say, oh, by the way, that company that got the bid, they don't have those. So you're getting this, you know, which may not be a color blender type light. It may not do this. It may not do that. And your whole thinking of what you were going to do is thrown off. But you got to deal with it because it's finance. Got to quit? Yeah. Buy the book, and then you'll know all this stuff.
Man, talk about an awesome discussion. I really hope you enjoyed the discussion as much as I did. I still have a number of things to write about from USITT, as well as some new and exciting stuff from the National Association of Broadcasters show that takes place in Las Vegas, Nevada this week. So stay tuned for more information. As always, thanks for downloading and listening to the iSquint podcast. Cheers.